States to promote a two-state solution that it is going nowhere. We know that Abbas has just become a figurehead. And he was unable to have a successful civil war in Gaza, and that he's losing credibility on the West Bank. We know that Pakistan, after the assassination of Benazir Bhutto, and I think just today Sharif resigned from the government, Nawaz Sharif. So we know that that's another area of major crisis. We know that both U.S. and Israel have repeatedly threatened to attack Iran. We know that all three presidential candidates have argued that every option is on the table, meaning nuclear weapons. In the case of Iran, we know that Hillary Clinton said that she was prepared to obliterate Iran. We also know that Saudi and Arabia and Iran are cutting all kinds of economic and military deals. We know that the Chinese and the Russians are very active in the area, especially with Iran. All of these are major threats to the United States and the region. And we also know now that because of this deep crisis of the United States in the Middle East, that there is a major foreign policy debate going on. We don't hear a lot about it, but some of it is now becoming public. And we know that the Council on Foreign Relations, which is, I mentioned, the premier foreign policy think tank, the publishers of Foreign Affairs magazine, have a new task force that they're creating with the Brookings Institute that is looking at all the major aspects of U.S. foreign policy, trying to figure out how they can possibly rescue the situation of the United States. And they will present this new blueprint for U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East in January of 2009 to the new administration. And my guess, and I've talked to a few people about it, we can go into it, is that the Council on Foreign Relations will present something that people are calling Walt and Mearsheimer Light. In other words, it'll be the U.S. to pound much harder on both Israel and the Palestinians, perhaps opening up some kind of a line of discussion with Hamas to create some kind of a Palestinian Bantustan that can then be presented to Saudi Arabia and the rest of the Arab world as Israel's compliance with the Saudi peace initiative of 2002 through 2008. But it would not be, I believe, any pressure on the United States for Israel to agree to resolution, UN resolutions 242 and 338. And I know this is kind of obscure for those who don't live through this stuff, but 224 and 338 were the United Nations resolutions called Land for Peace. And this is the proposal which Saudi Arabia and all the other countries of the Arab League have had on the table for Israel since for the last 6 years. And this, I think, is critical. And if Walt and Mearsheimer's proposals were fully implemented, U.S. military, diplomatic, and financial support for Israel would become contingent on an Israeli-Palestinian agreement removing the settlements and establishing what they call a viable Palestinian state. And that would be the implementation of UN resolutions 224 and 338. I've already said this one. They also hope that with such a peace agreement that this, 5 minutes, okay, we'll move fast, that Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Jordan would be free to then openly support U.S. policy in the Middle East, especially in Iraq and Afghanistan, and that they hope that they would then be able to recreate the coalition of the willing in the first Gulf War. And this, I think, really gets to the essence of it. And they actually, I found one paragraph in the book that says it, and if you want, we can go into it in a little while in the Q&A. But a comprehensive Middle East peace would allow Israel to finally be integrated into the military component of a revived Pax Americana, meaning it's not really a pax. It's really like the the military, the predominant position that the United States could be reinforced by Israel's major military force. This is what they say on page 344 of their book, which I think is the essence of their book. And according to Walton Mearsheimer, the U.S. could then finally use Israel as a military ally in the Persian Gulf, rather than being forced to have Israel sit inert, as it did in the first Gulf War and the second Gulf War, when the United States was desperate for outside help. And then, in theory, Israel could then openly fight in Iraq and Afghanistan, attack Iran, and reinstate the Saud family if and when it is toppled, and maybe our speaker will have a thought or two on that. And as I said at the beginning, the realist vision for the Middle East hardly differs from the neocons who are aligned with Israel's Likud party, whereas the realists would be more aligned with Israeli party merits, the Israeli parties that want Israel to pull back from the West Bank, from Gaza Strip, and some would even call for the full or partial dismantling of the settlements. And as I mentioned at the beginning, the neocons thought the path to Jerusalem was through Baghdad. The realists believe the path to Baghdad is through Jerusalem. And I might add that one of the formulas that Walton Mearsheimer called for is a counter lobby to the Israel lobby. They say, what could be done next? And interestingly, through people who were part of the Clinton White House, a guy named Jeremy Ben-Ami and a British Israeli named Daniel Levy, there's a new group called J Street that is specifically created as a countervailing force within the Jewish community and the general political climate in the United States, whose goal is to basically build support within the Jewish community in the United States to counter AIPAC, to create support for what Daniel Levy, the ideologue, called Walton Mearsheimer Light. In other words, when the Council on Foreign Relations is presented with this new presents its new program for the U.S. and the Middle East, that there will be a lobbying group within the Jewish community that will strongly support a two-state solution. So then the final question is, well, what should we say about Walton Mearsheimer, since much of what they say, I believe, is correct when it comes to the power of the Israel lobby over U.S. policy towards Israel and the Palestinians? I think they're correct when they talk about the Israel lobby being able to control this massive military footprint that I described. I think that's simply hogwash. I think the Israel lobby has no power to figure out how most of the Pentagon's budget is spent in the Middle East. But I do think that whenever people quote the valuable parts of the book, they always need to reference who Walton Mearsheimer are and what their agenda is, to make it clear that if your agenda differs than theirs, you will be able to endorse the things in the book that you think are positive without necessarily agreeing with their assumptions and their conclusions. So I thank you very much, and I think I hit my point.